97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, a recent allegation of rape against a UNC football player. Our guest, Nancy Hogshead Makar. She leads Champion Women, a nonprofit advocating for equality and accountability in sport. The focus areas include Title IX compliance in athletics departments and sexual harassment. Nancy, so basically all we've gotten at this point is the young woman's part of the story. The young man has not commented publicly, has refused interview requests. The university has come out with the standard, we can't really say much because this is an investigation, et cetera, et cetera. What should be happening at this point?
Well, the university, under Title IX regulations, had 60 days to complete its investigation. That's start to finish. Now, sometimes it can go a little bit longer if they're the police need to, you know, do some kind of investigation, but usually that's like an extra 3 days. It's usually not, you know, we're at the 6 month mark, and you know, there hasn't been any sort of real resolution, a thumbs up or thumbs down.
Yeah, the young woman claims that this took place on Valentine's Day. That's mid February, and here we are in mid September. She says the reason, and she identified herself, so we feel free to mention her name, Delaney Robinson. She's a sophomore here at the university. She held a press conference. Her attorney was there, and during this press conference, she said, the reason I'm doing this is because no one has helped me, the university, the district attorney's office, et cetera. So I wanted to talk about sort of the two extremes here, not in this case, but in cases like this. But what other alternative did she have, or did she have?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Is that what other alternative did she have? She went immediately to the hospital and consented to a rape kit, and then immediately contacted the school's Title IX coordinator. She did exactly what you would want a victim to do. Her stories remain consistent, which is actually very difficult for a rape, for anybody who's undergone trauma, not just rape, but anybody who's really undergone trauma. The brain, we now know how it functions after trauma, is not the way it would function, say, after somebody was burglarized or something like that. And what I think is really unique is that she's not only allowed her name to come forward, not only been on a press conference where she talked about it, but this is a very young person who does not buy into all the shaming and the victimology that has plagued the issue of sexual abuse and sexual assault for so many years that has kept victims quiet. So, you know, she's saying, I didn't do anything wrong. And even though sort of intellectually victims knew that, there was always such a culture of, well, you know, what, you know, kind of the treatment that she is complaining about that she got at the police department, that they were telling her, you know, what were you wearing and how much did you drink and, you know, et cetera. She doesn't buy into that at all. And I think the reason why she doesn't buy into that at all is a very concerted effort on groups like End Rape on Campus and the National Women's Law Center and others that have gone out directly and really sought out to, over time, to dismantle this blanket of shame that keeps victims quiet and keeps rape happening all over the world, really.
The one thing that really stands out in this case is that she, as a citizen, filed the charges, more or less, or asked for the charges, and a judge accepted that, and the young man did turn himself in to police. He was then released, but her attorney, and again, we have only what she has said and her attorney has said, because no one else is talking. But how extraordinary is that it gets to the point that a citizen files a complaint? In this case, the young woman filed the complaint against the young man.
Are you talking about she filed a criminal complaint?
She did. Well, she
said that the police had to act.
She requested self-sworn warrants, a warrant that a citizen can request. Yes.
Yeah, that's extremely unusual. I was a consultant on the Jameis Winston case. I represented the victim in that case. And, you know, the police did something very similar to what they did here, which is they sort of ignored it. And, you know, and there is this, I'm jumping topics just a little bit, but there is this sort of unholy triangle that is between the police department, the athletic department, and a defense attorney, a free defense attorney, that works to keep the athletic department immune from real criminal sanctions, that works to keep the business, if you will, of collegiate athletics moving forward. You know, I've said it many times, but the economics for women in who complain about sexual assault in athletic departments, it's the economics are all wrong for women. We're all wrong for victims. The overwhelming economic incentive is for the school is to keep that athlete playing. That there's such a huge difference between those very elite athletes, the ones that stay on the bell-shaped curve, who are way out on the end, they're really nothing like the next 100 athletes and the next 100 athletes after that. Like, the curve is so long that the incentive, the economic incentive to keep that athlete playing is big.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Nancy Hogshead Makar about this recent allegation of rape by a UNC female student against a UNC football player. Nancy, whenever you get into coverage of things like this, you know, I think we see this in the media on coverage of just about anything, that the young man is portrayed as a star on the football team. He's not. He's a reserve linebacker. You know, young women are often questioned by society, by the authorities about, well, you know, what did you do that led to this? And you see that kind of reporting. So what sort of responsibility do we as citizens, do we as a university community bear to make sure that both sides are adequately represented and that you know, no one is treated unfairly or given the soft glove treatment?
Right, that's exactly what you want. You want a process where people can be violently opposed to what the outcome was, but they understand the process, right? And I think, you know, you're seeing that a lot with the criminal process, not just with rape allegations, but say, you know, the amount, you know, say drug crimes, on how long people are being sentenced for nonviolent drug crimes. So what you want is a fair process where people have the opportunity to be heard, where there is you know, an opportunity to find out if the allegations are true or not. But let's, you know, what the University of Texas at Austin, what their department did was they saw that, first of all, that rape is so common on campus, and at University of Texas at Austin, they found that it was 18% of all of their students had been raped. And so they underwent a whole process to try to figure out, okay, what can we do as a police department to to better address this epidemic. And it's sort of this long-running epidemic. It's not a 1-2-3 epidemic. But what they said is that they're going to do more evidence-based, more victim-centered, more trauma-informed types of investigations, so that so that you do get the truth out. Now, part of being that, you know, trauma-informed and you know, trying to understand what happened is, look, the statistics are that false rape allegations, somebody who just makes it up or somebody who, you know, is vindictive and is filing something, are very rare. That they are the same for all other crimes. When somebody comes in to say that, hey, I've got a drug dealer who's right next to me, when somebody comes in to say, hey, I was beaten up, when somebody comes in to say, somebody, you know, stole my car, they're not looked at with nearly the suspicion that a rape victim is looked on. And that needs to change so that we understand it's between 2 and 8% of all claims will be false. But you do need to recognize there are 2 to 8% that will be false.
Yeah, you can't just 8%. Right, you can't totally discount those, because others will point to, well, look at Rolling Stone, the case of Jackie University of Virginia, completely false, and Rolling Stone made out like it was stone cold truth, and it wasn't.
Correct. Right. You do want to So and Rolling Stone admits that they did not do the kind of investigation that they should have done, right? So you want a process that is fair to everyone, that is thorough, but under Title IX, that process should be wrapped up in 60 days.
All right, so
for her not to have an answer here after half a year that's problematic in and of itself.
Okay, so the timing could be an issue. The university has responded saying, you know, we take these things very seriously. We want to make sure that the investigation is quick, but we want to make sure it's complete and fair and thorough. Can you do an investigation like this in 60 days?
Well, just, you know, watched her on the air. This is not a case where somebody took a long time, where there's, you know, conflicting stories. A lot of times you'll have text messages between the people where there's conflicting stories, or somebody says one thing to somebody and says something else. None of that's here. I mean, right? This is not one of those, well, we have to wait and get DNA evidence and that's going to take a long time. You don't have any of those indicators of things that might prolong an investigation. So what investigators ultimately have to do is look, one of these stories just doesn't make sense, or one of these stories is not credible here, and you need to have a thumbs up or thumbs down. I mean, schools are graded on a very lenient scale, which, and in order for them to be held liable, they have to be what's called deliberately indifferent to the process of moving a case forward. To delay a case as long as they have, they are approaching deliberate indifference.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Nancy Hogshead-Makar about these recent allegation of rape against a UNC football player. And in case the name Nancy Hogshead sounds familiar to our listeners, we should note that she is a swimmer of some note, having won 4 medals at the 84 LA Olympics, 3 of them gold. So, Nancy, you talked about, you know, athletes at the extreme end of the bell curve. You were there, right, during your competitive days. So you know what you're talking about. You're not, you know, some wild-eyed women's advocate who this guy is guilty no matter what. You know, and we're trying to look at things in light of what's fair to all parties. But you brought up Jameis Winston and the case of Brock Turner, the swimmer,
right,
at Stanford also comes up. So, yes, on the one end, you have the totally inaccurate story about Jackie at UVA. On the other end, you have Jameis Winston, who now depositions show that the Tallahassee police were trying to help cover that up. And the swimmer, who was given a very light sentence by a judge who's also a former Stanford athlete. So you have these two extremes, and where do we fall? You know, as a society, where do we fall? We want to offer this young woman all that she deserves, if indeed she's been victimized. We want to give the young man the benefit that we all have of innocent until proved guilty. So how do we make that balance?
Well, you know, it's really not as hard as people make it out to be. I consult with schools. I am a civil rights lawyer, and I work in this area all the time. And what everyone wants is to have a fair process that everybody can believe in and that is effective. One of the things that we know is not effective is to question a victim the way that she was questioned. What's unique is how social media and how different groups have gone about taking away the shame that used to be on rape victims so that this very young woman is able to be on camera and be as steady as they come and be able to say, I expect more from my police department and I expect more from my school. The way that she was questioned was very victim-blaming, all about what did she do to cause this? How is she responsible for this?
Now, that's what she says. I personally have not seen the tapes of the interviews of artists. And she says right. She has seen them, and this was the tone of the questioning.
Oh, yeah. And here she is, this very young woman, and she's able to recognize this and to call that out and to tell the world that this should not be happening, much like the Brock Turner victim was able to write in such an eloquent way about how profoundly that her rape has affected her life. And remember, she doesn't remember any of it, right? She was passed out at that time, and yet it has had this profound effect on her, so much so that the Vice President of the United States writes back and says this. What's unique is that I do a lot of work with sexual abuse in club and Olympic sports, and it used to be that the people who called me were about 40 years old, and they could come back and say, hey, I was molested. And you've got these short statute of limitations, so it keeps people from being able to really get that coach out off the pool deck or off the gymnastics meet or whatever. And here, what you're seeing is this whole social movement towards a fairness of process that true victims, they want it to be fair to men and women. They want to root out the cases that are unwarranted or unmerited. But unfortunately, and many times in school athletic departments, you have this nefariousness, like we saw in Jameis Winston, of the police, the athletic department, and this free attorney working together to be against to be against the victim. And that's the kind of thing that really thwarts justice.
All right, Nancy, in the 30 seconds or so that we have left, and this is a big topic to cover in 30 seconds, but affirmative consent means what?
It means that what you're looking for. I actually go a step further, and I say when I give trainings is what you want to get is enthusiastic consent. You want to have sex with somebody who's not just like, yes, you can have sex. You want to find somebody who is, you know, let's go, the two of us, right on, right? You're looking for that kind of consent. What you don't want is somebody who just doesn't object enough.
Or is incapacitated to the point of being able to object, which is the case here and was the case with the Brock Turner situation as well. Nancy, fascinating conversation. Thanks very much to our guest, Nancy Hogshead Makar. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.